Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
Like being on TV. We're good? All right. Well, good morning. So, you know, as I keep delving into this process of trying to understand this spiritual journey, it just gets deeper and deeper. You know, where we think we are is nowhere near where we need to be. It's a constantly unfolding process. So this particular series we're going to do is called Unity Life Skills for Uncertain Times. And, you know, we all are on our personal quest trying to figure out how to use these spiritual principles in the different experiences we have in our lives. I think last Sunday and the Sunday before, I talked about the fact how life is a paradox. You know, we're supposed to be spiritual beings functioning in a human body, but the paradox is, as spiritual beings, we run through so many things happening in our lives that it's a struggle to try to maintain that consciousness. So, you know, the whole reason for gaining spiritual knowledge is to find a way to apply this information to every aspect of our lives, no matter what it is. And to gain spiritual knowledge without seeking to discover a means or understanding of how to apply it to your life just ends up being a lot more rhetoric for the ego to brag about, you know, acting as if it knows what it's talking about. And you know what I'm talking about, right? This whole concept where we'll share spiritual principles with people like we know what we're talking about, but we still don't really have a full grasp of it. And I use that word rhetoric to mean language that is intellectually devoid of substance and meaningful content. You know, so the key here, as you'll hear me go through this, is the idea of the intellect and the intelligence. The intellect is merely an information gathering mechanism. That's all it does is gather information. But it has all this information, doesn't really know what it really is all about until it goes through the experiential process of actually having the experience of the information that it has. Then it moves from the intellect of being just information to intelligence. So intelligence is because you have the experience. Does it make sense? But most of the time, we just operate from our intellect. We just gather information, and somebody asks us something, we just spit it back at them with no real understanding of how that information works in the real world. So we are on a journey back to our original state of wholeness, wholeness being the perfect unification of the expression of spirit, soul, and body. You've heard that 1,000 times, right? Just like I showed a video to my students. Remember the video I showed to him, Prince Ah, Everybody Dies But Not Everybody Lives? You know, every year I show that to my students, and they're really impressed by it. But this year, they weren't impressed. It's like the 18-year-olds, as the years go by, are a totally different breed. And so I said to them, you know, you guys didn't find that in? He goes, oh, we've heard that before. You know, and so that's, they're in that mentality. We heard it before, but they don't really understand what they heard. You get what I'm saying? So it's the same thing with us even when we come to these deeper spiritual principles. We've heard them before, but do we really understand what we've heard? And it's important to remember that in your journey towards wholeness, the information you're studying is for you first. It's really not for us to go out and tell people. Before sharing it with others, you must come to understand through daily practice how to integrate it into your life and affairs. And, you know, as you evolve spiritually, you won't have to tell anybody because those around you will begin to sense that there's something different going on with you. Okay. On our, you know, and the key is, I want you to understand, these practices are being used all the time. I had a situation where I came home Thursday from school, and Friday I had this big project I was going to work on for school, and then I realized I left my whole folder for the project at school. So I said, oh, God. No, it's actually Thursday because there's going to be a meeting on Friday. And I said, oh, geez, I got to go back to the school. So I jumped in the car, and by the time I didn't even get out of my neighborhood, I just got to Bobby's house. And Spirit said, you don't need that folder. I said, really? He said, nope, just turn around. I went back home. And sure enough, the next meeting had nothing to do with what I thought it was going to be about. So I mean, you have to listen all the time, you know. And it was a real thing inside me that says, "Don't go. You don't need to go." And I was like, "Okay," but I got to the point now. I don't need it to be strong. I just know, you know. So that's what it means. You have to work with these ideas all the time. So, you know, again, our journey back to wholeness. One of the first stations you have to deal with is your willingness to be truthful with yourself. Your willingness to be truthful with yourself. So many people live their lives with some sense of guilt and not being fully truthful with themselves and people around them. You know, our intention is good, but we always are not truthful. It's like this. This is a discussion question. You heard me use it before in here. I ask my students to create a discussion. Is it possible to be perfectly honest with everyone all of the time? Yeah, I already heard some no's. Yeah, like everybody, oh, no, right? I ain't doing that. But, you know, that's the key of the process. And one of the people I show videos of in the class, I like this guy, Sasha Strauss, S-T-R-A-U-S-S, Sasha Strauss. He's a brilliant, he does his consultant, but he deals with the new mind that you have to deal with in business. So that mindset is changing constantly, and you have to understand how to deal with that new mind. And he says that how we take all of our thoughts that we have about our happiness, our family, our friends, our career, our ideas about faith, you know, where and how we live, the state of our health, the state of the country, we take all of it and more, and we push them through what he calls an insecurity filter and create an identity for ourselves. And when he said it, he kind of made a little smirk. He goes, "Notice I said insecurity filter, not security filter." It's because most of the time we're pushing this stuff through our insecurity filters, you know. And so he says that there are things that we connect ourselves to that cause us to render an identity through which we present ourselves to the world. So we take all of these concepts, we run them through our insecurity filter. So my perception then is going to be different from yours, because my insecurities are different from yours. The way I see the world is different from yours. You know, and I said to my students, I said, how many, you know, these 18, 19-year-olds, how many of you have insecurities? And I said, you don't have to raise your hand, but they raise their hand anyway. I said, but you have to understand, at 18, 19 years old, I work with people who are 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old who still have insecurity filters. I said, so don't feel bad about that. This is a process you have to learn, understand how to work through, okay? So, you know, the key to this process is how do I get to this place where I begin to understand who I really am and how I'm presenting myself to the world. And the thing we do by pulling all the things through our insecurity filter, that's a normal human process. So remember, as I tell my students, there is no good or bad in what we're saying. You get what I'm saying? We're never saying this is good, this is bad, this is the way it should be, this is the way it, no. It's just we want to understand where we are and understand what we're trying to get to. You know, so this is a normal human process, but from a spiritual perspective, the one and true identity that we're trying to get to is that which was expressed by Jesus, which is I and the Father are one. Now, I want you to understand that when Jesus made that statement, he was not there. Everybody get what I'm saying? When he made that statement, he was not there. Right? We all say, oh, yeah, Jesus was one with the Father. No, Jesus was, that was his goal. That was how he was moving towards. Now, if we look at, I can't help myself from getting into this, but if we look at it for a second through the process of the crucifixion resurrection, which we know is symbolic of what we go through all the time, it was at the point of the resurrection that he was one with the Father. But when he made that statement, it's important to understand that he had not fully attained it. It was a statement that moves us through the spectrum from guilt to glory. I and the Father are one. It's moving us through this spectrum. Guilt is the kingdom of the ego, and glory is the kingdom of the soul. And that's what we're trying to get ourselves to. Okay? And it's a battle in the Bhagavad Gita. There's a battle constantly between the kingdom of the ego and the kingdom of the soul. All right, and so the kingdom of the ego is trying to keep us in our lower senses, and the kingdom of the ego of the soul is trying to move us to our higher senses, specifically that spiritual point that we call the spiritual eye, where we can see spiritually. And that's the battle that we're going through all the time. So this idea of moving from guilt to glory, listen to what this psychiatrist says. True guilt is the guilt that one feels from not fulfilling the obligation one has to oneself, to be oneself. Let me say that again. True guilt is the guilt that one feels from not fulfilling the obligation one has to oneself, to be oneself. Now, false guilt is the guilt from not being what other people feel that one ought to be and assume that you should be. You get me? All right? So it's sort of the idea of what you think of me is none of my business. All right? You have to begin to understand who I am truly, not who you think I should be. Okay? So in unity, we do not advocate guilt at all, as guilt causes us to condemn ourselves. And the healing process that we recommend is self-observation. Say it with me. Without condemnation. Okay? So the journey to wholeness is about the work one has to do to evolve about one's, you know, understand, evolve one's thoughts and actions that lead to guilt and help those to evolve to a process where we come more from glory. Okay? Guilt is operating from fear. Glory is operating from love. Exactly. Okay? So condemnation and the resulting feelings of guilt are destructive to the process of healing and self-discovery that we need to go through in order to become whole. So if I'm operating in guilt all the time, then I cannot evolve to wholeness. I just can't. Okay? Condemnation and guilt typically lead to perpetual self-punishment and continuous fragmentation of our psyche, which is detrimental to the process of wholeness. So fragmentation means that in one moment I might be happy, but in the next moment something happens and I'm sad. I'm constantly, you know, going back and forth. I'm not remaining whole. All right. So from unity.net, truthunity.net. If anybody who's been out there, truthunity.net. All right, great place to get information from. When Jesus says, "I and the Father are one," in order to perfect the idea of oneness with the Father God, we must be willing to let go of the idea of suffering. The reason for this is God the Father, the principle of good, has no knowing of suffering or imperfection of any kind. Who got that? All right, let me say it again. Jesus said, "I and the Father are one. I is God. The Father is God." Jesus never mentioned the ego, Jesus. "I and the Father are one. In order to perfect the idea of oneness with the Father God, we must be willing to let go of the idea of suffering. The reason for this is God the Father, the principle of good, has no knowing of suffering or imperfection of any kind." So when I go to the Father in prayer, if I go there suffering, God is only seeing my wholeness. So the purpose of going in prayer is to move from suffering to wholeness. In that moment, whatever you're struggling with, you leave it outside the door when you enter into prayer. Okay, that's the practical application of the process. All right, it's the idea behind the... So the divine idea, "I and the Father are one," can be used as sort of a mantra. "I and the Father are one." So you're going through some stuff, you enter right into your mantra. "I and the Father are one. No matter what's going on, I and the Father are one." What's going on with you? "I and the Father are one." All right? It's your mantra. All right? And it moves you, it moves you into consciousness out of the realm of suffering and into the realm of divine knowing, where suffering is not known. You hear the practice? It's a practical process. It's the idea behind the prayer, "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit, soul, mind, and body." Now, I emphasize commit because sometimes I say submit and sometimes I say surrender, depending on what the situation is. All right? So, "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit, soul, mind, and body." Okay? So, our goal is wholeness. Wholeness comes when there's harmony, consistency, compatibility between what you think, say, and do. Our challenge is if disharmony, inconsistency, incompatibility in our thinking, speaking, and doing is a normal part of our psyche, then it can be very challenging to change. If that's where you think all the time, if that's where your discussion is all the time, that's where you go right away, it's hard to change from that. It's so normal to you that that's just how you show up. Okay? So it's sort of becoming conscious. And as Dr. Carl Jung says, the psyche cannot jump out of the psyche. You just can't change all of a sudden. Prayer and meditation was what helps you make that transition. So let's start our spiritual journey towards wholeness from a different context. I realize that our inner mental context is our inner mental context. That's the way we are, okay? And we can only evaluate things according to the nature of where we presently are. But my assumption is we are all here because we at least want to be open and receptive to discovering a the divine potential within us, the divine truth within us. That's why we're here. That's why we study these ideas. Am I with you? Right? So it's not that we got it. It's not even that I have it. Right? If I have it more than you have it, it's only because I have to do this every week. I have to do this. Now, I say I have to do this, but I actually can't wait to get to it because it's just so much. The internet is so full of powerful ideas to work with. You know, so this is a great time to be, and that's what Sasha Strauss was saying. He said it was a great time to be alive because all the information in the world is at your fingertips. A great time. And all of us can, most of all of us can remember when this wasn't true. You know, you had to run to a library or something. But now, and as he says, you have your own personal rectangular thing right in your face to get all the information from, right? So this is a great time to be, you know, to learn all these ideas. So I want to propose that each one of us in this process begin to explore the possibility that we have within us the potential to live as a mystic. Now, according to the revealing word, a mystic is one who has intimate, firsthand acquaintance with God from continuously practicing the presence of God. A mystic lives a life of prayer that results in intuitive knowing and experience with life. So you say, well, how can I be a mystic? Well, just begin to be conscious of God all the time in all that you do. Constantly. All right? Now, remember, you are already a mystic. It's about awakening to understanding that dynamic within you. So to further clarify what we mean by the term mystic, the dictionary defines mysticism as that which has a spiritual reality that is not apparent to the intellect or senses. It is living in a context that stems from direct communication with reality or God. So in other words, when you're functioning as a mystic, you begin to get information that comes to you that your intellect has no understanding about. You get it? Okay? It further explains mysticism is the belief that union with God may be attained through contemplation, meditation, and self-surrender. To begin the meditation, I am not the body, and I'm not even the mind. How many people were at the retreat? That's the meditation we were doing. I am not the body. I'm not even the mind. There is something behind all of that. All right? So to live the life of a mystic, and stick with me, is to be willing to live in an unintelligible relationship with the power and presence that transcends the reality of normal human intelligence. Let me explain. The term unintelligible means incomprehensible and refers to a relationship about receiving information and guidance from a communication that your human intellect cannot fully comprehend. So if I wasn't aware of the fact that I was always conscious of spirit talking to me, when I got that message when I was heading back to the school, I would have said, well, no, I got to go. And I would just going on. Because my intellect would have said, why not go? The stuff that you need is there. You see, it would have been an argument going on. How many people had that argument going on in your head all the time? You're fighting with God. You get it? Because it's unintelligible. The information you're getting from God is unintelligible to your intellect. And the more intellectual you are, the bigger, the more you fight. All right? Is that all making sense? Okay? So mysticism is a way of interacting in the world with faith and a power and presence that we cannot see or adequately explain. So in reality, having faith is the ability to know that you do not know. That's what faith is. And to realize that what you think you know is a mere speck in the total wisdom of the universe. You could take Stephen Hawking as brilliant as he was, Albert Einstein, as brilliant as he was, that was only a speck in the totality of all the wisdom in the universe. Are you following me? Okay. So in a way, having faith is claiming spiritual ignorance, meaning I cannot know all the knowing that is potentially possible to know. I have faith. I am spiritually ignorant. I don't even know what is possible to come to me to solve what I'm going through. Is that okay? So it's amazing that no matter how many degrees you may have, how much information your intellect has gathered, it means nothing to the virtual realm of infinite potentiality that God is. Okay? So a mystic is a person of prayer who practices the presence of God through a life of prayer, which results in a connection to an intuitive intelligence from the mind of God. So, because you're constantly practicing this, you're getting higher and higher. If we looked at it in a Kundalini yoga, you're moving higher and higher up the spinal system until you get to that pituitary gland, which is the highest point, and that spiritual eye. That's what it's doing as you're climbing that ladder within yourself when you're in that point, that period of meditation. So living a life of a mystic requires an intimate relationship with our inner faculty of faith. And yes, we're defining faith as if it is a center that is has a pre-established presence within the makeup of our psyche. We know that faith is one of the what? 12 powers, okay? Sounds like. Right? And since faith is a pre-existing faculty within the makeup of our psyche, it's not something we have to strive to have, as it is frequently used. You must have more faith. Okay? So it's not a matter of striving to have more faith. You have all the faith you possibly can have. Say that again? Yes, be more faith. Be more of that which you already are. So it's a spiritual gift from God of which we have become more aware. That's what we're striving for, is more awareness. As one mystic explains it, it's a matter of realization rather than discovery. So every time you think you discovered something, you didn't discover anything. It was already there. You just became aware of it. So what you're asking for more of is awareness. God, help my awareness. You know, like the man said to Jesus, help my unbelief. You know, so it's saying, help my awareness to increase. All right, so the advantage of living life as a mystic is that through a closer relationship with God, you receive inner guidance about each event, circumstance, situation you're experiencing. Everything you're going through, you'll receive divine guidance. Okay? No longer do you have to react, but rather you can gently be guided to how to lovingly and compassionately respond to what you're experiencing in your life. You learn how to bring peace and harmony where conflict and resentment and even violence may have prevailed. Right. So the dictionary says that a reactionary is one who reacts in opposition to progress. One who reacts in opposition to progress. So the main problem with being a reactionary is that not only do you progress slowly along the spiritual path, but you progress painfully and fearfully along the spiritual path. And you don't have to make that choice. All right? So the key that we want to do is being a reactionary causes us to live our lives backwards, and we don't want to live our lives backwards. Living our lives backwards is seeking all that you want, and then if you have time, you'll seek the kingdom of heaven. That's living life backwards, okay? This is how the modern-day mystic Margaret Young explains it. Often people attempt to live their lives backwards. They try to have more things, more money in order to be, you know, have more and do more of what they want so they'll be happy. The way it actually works is in reverse. You must first come to realize who you really are, then what you are guided to do in order to have what you want. So when you get in touch with who you really are, a spiritual being, a child of God, endowed with all that God is, once you come to that consciousness, then the things that you want just come to you. Because the Father knows what you want, what? Even before you ask. Okay? So you must first come to realize who you are. You might say, well, how do I do that? You know, how do I find out who I really am? How many people are still struggling with that? You know, how do I, who am I really? And you look in the mirror and go, ooh, that's me, right? Or when they say to look in the mirror and go, oh, you must be kidding, right? All right. So the answer is living the life of a mystic, meaning living a life, a prayer, prayerful communion, communion with God, the indwelling Lord of your being. So you're constantly in prayer, constantly in prayer. If you find yourself getting upset because you're in traffic and you say to yourself, I'm upset because I'm in traffic. And that's not what I want to do. One of the mystics we were listening to was saying, people get their dream machine, and they're in their dream machine, and they get into traffic, and the traffic is holding them up, and they're upset, sitting in a dream machine, upset, not realizing the universe is giving you a little bit more time to be in your dream machine. Yeah. But we get upset with everything. So the process is to notice that. What are the things that upset me, and why am I really upset? What is the real deal that's going on here? You know, and you begin to work for it. And the ego doesn't like that, because the ego doesn't like to be observed. It doesn't like for you looking at what it's doing. You know, like, you know, little kids say, stop looking at me. You know how little kids do that? So the choice is simple. Just ask yourself, do I want to continue to live my life as a reactionary? Or do I want to make a conscious choice to live my life as a mystic, as taught by Jesus? The reactionary is in the world and greatly affected by it, often feeling like a victim of the conditions, the events, and the people of the world. The mystic, on the other hand, lives from a sense of mastery that comes from intuitive knowing. As Jesus explained, the mystic is in the world, but not of it. Okay? So as we are on this crossroad, we're at this crossroads, you know, another one of those crossroads where we have to make the choice, you know, it's typical of the spiritual path. Am I going to be a victim or a master? Which am I going to choose? All right. Now, if you hear yourself respond with, well, the choice is not that simple. I don't have control of all the things that are occurring in my life. And that's true. We don't have control over all the things that are occurring in our lives. But if you're thinking that, you know, you have to understand to yourself that you still, no matter what is occurring, have the ability to respond to them as opposed to react to them. Especially now that you know that you have a choice, you can ask, am I going to choose to be a victim? Am I going to choose to be a master? And let me just say again, there's no right or wrong. If you feel emotionally that you're going to be a victim in this situation, nobody's judging you. Spirit is not judging you. Universe is not judging you. You get what I'm saying? You know, we might be judging ourselves and each other, but the universe is not judging us. The universe is saying, well, try that path and see what happens. See what you like. You know? Right? No matter which way you go, I'm going to what? I'm going to be right here for you, right here with you, sharing with you, you know, that there could be other possibilities. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because thou art with me. You're right? You have to kind of keep that in your mind all the time. So the reactionary usually chooses to turn to the false god of fear and worry. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. But the reactionary will choose the false gods of fear and worry. The mystic naturally turns to the all-knowing power and presence of God, which gives the mystic the advantage of being all-knowing by divine association. Living the life of a mystic makes you all-knowing by divine association. Which do you choose? Okay, now it takes work to live life as a mystic. It takes nothing to live the life as a victim. Nothing. You just do what you do. All right? So the challenge is you want to work to doing something different from what you have normally been doing. So to repeat, the mystic operates from a very different mental context than the reactionary. It is an inner mental context attached to peace, faith, love, and joy. And the mystic approaches everything in life from a standpoint of being honest with him or herself. That is, being honest about his or her intentions in each encounter, constantly asking the question, in this situation, am I serving God or am I serving myself? Am I going to be a victim or am I going to be a master? You just think. Stuff comes up and you stop for a minute. And people say, what do you think? He says, just hold on. I just felt that victim come up. But I'm not going to do that this time. I'm going to be a master. And once you say that, you will get the information you need to function from that standpoint. I guarantee it. All right? And if you say, I want to be a victim, then God says, go for it. I'll be here, but go for it. What does they say? How does that? How does that work for you? Thank you. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So this is the beginning point of implementing all spiritual principles. That is, you start with yourself by determining what your intentions are. Are you willingly working the principles or not? And it's recorded in Luke 8:15 that Jesus said, and as for that sown in the good soil, they are those who bear the word, hold it fast in an honest and good heart, and bring forth fruit with patience and love. That's a wonderful verse. And the soil Jesus is referring to is the content of our consciousness. He is asking, after hearing the word, can you hold it fast in an honest and good heart? Because you hear the word all the time. I know you hear the word all the time. But sometimes you hear it, but you don't let yourself hear it. That's because you have chosen a different path. Okay? So he's saying, if you can hold that word, you will be given that which you need to move forward. Because if you cannot hold the word, you're going to need to check the content of your inner mental context. What is the nature of your intention, how you live by? Is your intention to live by fear, or is your intention to live by faith? You have to establish that intention, okay? And remember, all spiritual principles and practices, it's just a process. It's a process, guys. We're all, in my Father's house, there are many mansions, or many rooms. That means that there's a space for all of us. We're all in God's house. We're just in different spaces. You know, if you want to get to the penthouse, you got to work the game, right? You got to work the process. But it's all working okay. So remember, all the spiritual principles of process is not something you try to implement with others right now. Because if you yourself are not right with it, you often do not get the results that you're hoped for when you try to tell somebody else about it. You've got to work these principles until you really know them in your spirit. Okay? You must first work the principles within yourself. The mystic intuitively knows that if he or she learns how to implement spiritual principles and practices within his or herself first, it will naturally flow out into the relationships. They will just feel it when you step into their space. Okay? So getting honest, bone honest with oneself is the beginning of the spiritual journey towards wholeness. So I'm going to leave you with this thought from the Course in Miracles. You are the work of God, and God's work is wholly lovable and wholly loving. This is how you must think of yourself in your heart, because it is the way of a loving heart that you will discover who you truly are. And so it is. Amen.